Okay, so what I'm going to talk about today is essentially a continuation of the talk of Aparna from 2 days ago. And yeah, she excuses herself, she's not feeling well, so not going to be here. So the idea is we have heard, especially from her, a lot about active matter in sort of a lower density region where you could, where special hydrodynamics is applicable. What I would like to do is to incorporate, in addition to these techniques and simulation techniques, knowledge and methods from the granular materials community. For example, what this is, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen this, is a picture of a quad flow of a granular bidispersed system under stresses. So this is this what you can see here is something between. Sorry, it's been a while since I said this. So these are photoelastic disks, so between cross-polarizers, you see the stresses. So you see what's here called force chains. So in general, granular materials have this very heterogeneous stress response and response to perturbation, and also very heterogeneous type of fluctuations, which are similar also to some seen in glasses. So if one combines these two things, so extruded volume and statics resembling granular matter together with the dynamics of active matter, I would call this dense active matter quite prosaically, and that you expect new dynamical and mechanical properties. So there are several areas of application. One of them is artificial self-propelled particles at high density, including some of the ones we saw earlier today. And also cell monolayers, tissues, bacterial swarms, actually any area where you might attain higher density. So I will not give you a full introduction because you know all of this. Let me just straight away introduce the type of model we use. So our model is different from the usual Wittek type models in a number of aspects. So while in the Wittek model, every particle has a fixed speed and only changes sort of stepwise with a stepwise update its direction depending on its neighbors. This happens in a somewhat more physical manner in the models we use. So first, we start with something resembling a Langevin equation, with neglecting the noise since these things are relatively large. So a fully overdamped velocity is equal to the self-propulsion, which is implemented as a force, as it might well be for a self-propelled colloid. And any interactions with its neighbors are not as long-range, essentially, interactions like with the birds who look at, who might just truly observe their neighbors. They exert only two physical short-range forces. In this case, just purely volume exclusion. So purely physical forces, self-propulsion is a force. The dynamics are standard overdamped. So this is the common backbone of all of the various types of simulations we have performed. So together with this particular type of dynamics, I would like to talk about actually only two of these three, because also because we know that I might talk about the second one if we get time. So I'll talk about what I call active jamming, which is this the model which I just introduced, plus a various type of alignment. Now we'll talk about an even simpler model of non-aligning dynamics, where we also get a glass transition. If there is time, I would like to return to the point of cluster formation, which Aparna already talked about, and sort of would like to present the model of Yao and Christina from a year and a half ago, which goes with this. So for the polar alignment, in addition to the dynamics which I just showed for the velocity, there's angular dynamics. In this case, it's alignment. But this is slightly tricky, so let me explain this. So each particle has 3 degrees of freedom. It has positions x and y, derivatives of which give me the velocity as one independent vector. In addition to this, it has a separate normal direction. This is, for example, if you had a Janus particle, this would be its polar axis. So it's something that's inherent to the particle. But my, theta is the angle of the velocity, phi is the angle of the normal direction. So this dynamics is for the polar direction, and what it says is, in a time scale tau, I will align my polar direction to the velocity direction of the particle plus rotational noise. So one way you could imagine that this comes about is, let's say I'm a particle, I'm going this direction, I get jostled, like in a crowd, in a particular other direction. What do? I realign myself and move in the direction of least resistance. I should add that there's something particular about this. As you notice, this is a single particle interaction. This does not explicitly interact with the other particles. So you might wonder, is this thing aligning or what kind of dynamics it is? So you can show basically by that this is aligning through the following mechanism. Let's say I have one particle and another particle moving towards each other. Because they're overdamped, when they collide, they will just stick in contact. What happens then is that their normal directions will align with the velocity, and so eventually get these things moving toward, moving parallel and aligning.
So the only time
yes.
that V and N are not exactly parallel
yes.
to each other are when two particles collide, and particle A would love to go in this direction, but particle B is
yes.
away, so it goes in a different direction, and then eventually N catches up
yes.
with V.
So I mean, okay, so at low density, this is rarely. At high density, that's all the time. So especially at high density, there are significant differences between this and the standard only 2 degree of freedom type Wittek model.
If you didn't have the ends, the particles
yes.
would still follow exactly the same trajectory?
If I didn't have the ends, I mean, I'm losing a degree of freedom. Then let's say if I didn't have the alignment, which I'm going to show you later on, like if I only had the noise term, each particle would do a persistent random walk plus being jostled by other particles.
What do you mean by that?
Not having
does not cooperate with velocity?
Yes, it does. It does through, here, this is, I mean, the phi variable is the angle of this one. So it comes in through the self-propulsion. Yes. So, okay, we started with this, and given my background in jamming and actually inspired by some of these tissue experiments, is where we added a couple of ingredients. The first one is confinement, because as I told you, this thing becomes a polar aligning state at lower density, which doesn't do anything terribly interesting, or at least we thought at the time. So at confinement, I also add polydispersity and the harmonic potential in such a point that the passive limit is the granular jamming transition, so the potential is just harmonic repulsion, some polydispersity, just adding standard ingredients, so we know the sort of self-propulsion equals zero limit of the system. So I'll skip the low-density behavior. I'll immediately show you the high-density behavior, which is, to put it mildly, quite unexpected. So what you see here is aperiodic oscillations with very spatial heterogeneous and out-of-phase type of pattern, but it's perfectly periodic. So for those of you who are familiar with granular matter, this looks an awful lot like a soft mode of a granular packing above jamming. And actually what we could do, we can show that these are related. We'll probably not get time to go over the details, but I can explain to you in detail how they're linked to low energy modes. I'll explain it with my hands for a little bit. But before I go there,
so do you have harmonic contraction with nearest neighbor?
Yes.
And some pocket.
Yes, that's all. So it's the standard. It gives a crystal, and crystal is oscillating in plane wave-like type of. So we only did it. We didn't do this very systematically, but Yaren had movies which do this pretty clearly. And these things are phonons. So here's a phase diagram. I would like to put this into context. So on the x-axis is packing fraction. On the y-axis the self-propulsion speed. Now, if you remember the colloidal glass transition, the colloidal glass transition would have density and temperature, and it would have actually a similar, say, okay, here's glass, here's liquid below the density, and if I drive hard enough, I melt the system again. So qualitatively, it has quite some of the same features as you might expect from a thermal system. And the way we have determined this phase diagram is through the mean square displacement. So, okay, there's some subtleties at the lower density, but mainly it's either ballistic or diffusive. So it's unbounded growth. But then at a density which is extremely close to the two-dimensional jamming density, this thing moves onto a confined state. So you see it's confined. Particles are stuck in their cages with this very uniform oscillations around it. So you get a very special, what I would call an active glass or an active jammed state at higher density and lower driving. Like I have also a picture for this here. So if you drive hard enough, you go through a similar transition towards the melting of the system.
Is this mean square displacement not tend to work a combined system?
Yes, this is a confined system. I will show you later periodic ones. So I should add, this is a bit peculiar in that it's confined in this. And I should have explained this properly. You saw it's confined in a ring. Please ask me about this part later. We just very briefly sketch. So what we can do is a linear response expansion of the equations of motion around the jammed state using the Hessian matrix and the normal modes of the Hessian matrix. The same thing you would do in a jammed system. So one can linearize the equations of motion, eliminate the angle. Then after a certain amount of work, we get a harmonic oscillator equation for the mode amplitude. So just to touch briefly on this, so what happens is the tau should be here. There is some sort of effective inertia due to the angular coupling, which is, I mean, because you could think it's surprising that a system oscillates, that it oscillates even though I have first order equations. So it comes from here because this angular coupling inertia. The frequencies are determined by the mode frequencies, the omega nu square. And I have a friction term in the middle, which damps them down. So the interesting thing here is that a friction term goes like omega nu square, which means it increases with mode frequency quadratically, which means that the higher the mode frequency, the stronger the damping is. So the only logical solution to this thing is a self-consistent situation. But this is zero for the lowest frequency modes, then increases quadratically for the higher frequency modes. Then you can solve this and essentially predict what you also observe numerically, that the lowest frequency modes are by far oscillating the strongest, and any higher frequency things are much overdamped. So here's just an example. There's a couple of actually very low frequency modes. This particular one, out of 2,000 independent modes, in itself has about 25% of the motion to itself. So about 25% of the dynamics is projected onto that single mode. And with about 10 of them, one can get something like 90% of the motion, which is truly a lot. Compared to thermal systems or even shear systems, you need a lot more than this. Mode frequencies are also what the linear response predicts. No, it's a soft mode. It's one of these. Basically, what they look like is like a lot of local non-affine motion, sort of doing rearrangements locally inside. So more or less like what you actually saw in the picture. You can also do this with the density of states. So, which means, I mean, this is the projection of our motion. It projects very much onto the lowest frequency modes. A thermal system would have a 1 over omega square here, which means an equipartition, a normal equipartition, a normal thermal equipartition. So the idea is a bit like what Christina introduced on Monday, reverse energy cascade. I put in motion at this scale, at things equivalent to interparticle displacement in frequency. and it cascades down and becomes into global and further global motion and ends up here at the very lowest energy scales or largest distances available to the system. So it's quite interesting. It's a question which remains, of course, is how generic is this, because it relies on this particular alignment mechanism. So the next thing we did is look at an even simpler system, which is a system essentially without any alignment. So I should just add this because I don't seem to have the equation there. So there it's just very simple, phi dot equal eta. So just rotational diffusion, nothing else. And I will show you a couple of movies to show you what the dynamics of this thing looks like.
Is this more like the system Aparna was describing?
Yes, in fact, more or less the identical system to Aparna. The only difference with Aparna's system, there are two small differences. One of them, we use a harmonic potential, not a WCA, so ours is much softer. And the second one is our system is still polydispersed, so our high-density system is not crystalline. It will be glass-like with a disordered local structure. So this one, this is a high-density system, 90% packing fraction. This is above jamming, so this for a thermal system, this would be a glass for a jammed system. This would be a jammed packing. I'm driving it at comparatively strong driving frequency. What I mean by strong is going to become clear in the phase diagram in a couple of slides. I'll have to play this again. It should be looping. What you see here is very heterogeneous dynamics. You see both in amplitude and in direction. You see correlations, and you see a hole in there. You see a hole in the system, which is the same as this phase segregation that Aparna introduced 2 days ago. It's the same. It's the same origin to the system that basically velocity reduces here due to crowding, and you get spontaneous segregation into pieces. If I reduce the driving, I cannot create holes anymore. Instead, I would get some sort of very complex liquid. So what you can see is that there are long-range correlations, very, very heterogeneous. This does resemble both a dynamical heterogeneity and a sheared system.
It's just the bigger red arrows means magnitude of quantum.
Yes, of course, I should have said that. So here's a snapshot. So you see very heterogeneous in position. Some places are much stronger. We see this correlation, like couple of particle type of correlation length happening in the system, which also resembles what you would expect in a granular or a glassy system. And yes, so it's dynamics strongly reminiscent of these systems. Then eventually, if I reduce my driving fast enough, I can trap the system. I can trap the system as in what I mean, it means for displacement would be flat. As you can see, the fluctuations, however, are still strongly correlated in the intermittent, reminiscent of the picture from the previous movie. So what I've done now is just a slice at fixed density, just reduced my driving, and here's a difference of 10 between the first and the last picture. So very briefly, we used two criteria to determine the phase diagram. One of them is the mean square displacement. So there's basically the exponent of the long-time behavior of the mean square displacement is alpha, which would be 1 for a diffusive system and 0 for a glass. For example, here you can see the transition as a function of density. The other one is the number fluctuation exponent. As we have discussed already earlier, there is a strong active number fluctuations in these things. In particular, once the system starts to phase segregate, obviously you will get fluctuations which diverge. So I don't want to fix this one particular exponent because we see a continuously varying exponent. I'm just saying anything which is above the equivalent passive exponent, I consider active, and then I do a cutoff in the beta value. We can discuss about some of the subtleties later. So, okay, here's the phase diagram. So it's like before, I have density on one axis. I have driving speed rescaled by interaction strength on the other one. So just to remind you again, so here this lower axis would be what you expect for a passive system, so a liquid, which then eventually gets stuck and becomes a glass or jammed system. Here at intermediate density, we see this transition from a liquid to phase-separated liquid. This is the same transition as Aparna explained 2 days ago. And we're in more or less qualitative and quantitative agreement with their data, although there's some subtle differences, mostly linked to runtime system sizes and similar. The really interesting stuff, in addition to this, is at high density. So what you see is that this is the cut which I showed you with the movies. At very high driving speed, I see a phase-separated liquid, which is the liquid with a hole inside. Then I transition through a dense liquid here, which is not phase-separated, and eventually the system freezes. So you get a succession of three different phases at a high density. Especially this gap between these two was not absolutely not obvious. And this is on a log scale. I can tell you this is about a difference of a factor of 10 in driving speed in this particular one. We have, taken additional data, a different Peclet number. So to remind you, the Peclet number, in this case, is the ratio of the active driving scale, the driving speed and scale divided by the rotational diffusion scale, dimensionless number. So at high Peclet number, the system is very correlated over time and moves very far before it reorients. And at low Peclet number, it should be the thermal limit. So what you see here, first of all, the glass transition boundary line, it seems to be barely affected by here in this change of actually coming closer to a thermal system. But the region of phase separation shrinks over time. We expected in the limit of a thermal system, this would disappear. Even though this limit is very subtle and hard to understand in this particular system. You also see that this point here, that basically the region here at the bottom, where you turn over and below which no phase-separated system can exist, seems to be scaling with Peclet number. So all of the curves here collapse around the point, which is more or less Peclet number 10 at density 0.60-something. So there's evidence that this may actually be a critical point, though, I mean, it's currently a bit more speculation within the theory, and numerical evidence is what it is. So, but something interesting clearly happens here, and there's clearly regions which are not phase-separated, which exist below a critical driving speed. I might skip this. This is going to be most interesting, I believe, to Aparna. So we have our own argument for the boundary between the homogeneous liquid and the phase-separated region, which rests essentially on a similar idea. What we need is the negative diffusion locally. So basically, there's a density instability when the effective diffusion coefficient becomes negative, and we estimate it using binary collisions the effective velocity in the system. And this is very similar to Aparna. There's a combination of two timescales, one of them being the reorientation time, which is what she put in. To this, we would like to add another timescale of the particles moving around each other. We can solve this, find your effective velocity, which decreases with density, plug this back in here, solve for the critical point, and get something which is constant plus constant over Peclet. So it has the correct scaling of depending only on the Peclet number. But we also find a minimum density below which there should not be any phase separation, which is borne out in our system at the very least. So OK, now I want to move towards this sort of higher density region. So this is, again, very briefly for you, this is the at low driving speed, This is the melting transition, so this is the exponent alpha. To remind you, there's a mean square displacement exponent. It goes from essentially zero, which means a frozen system, to one diffusive system for different densities. So it goes from, it melts, for example, for 86% volume fraction at 0.01 velocity. Then at higher volume fraction, you have to essentially linearly move to higher densities to melt the system. And similarly, the transition to clustering, measured by the exponent beta of the number fluctuations, also moves towards higher driving speeds with increasing density, again in a nearly linear fashion. And as you can see in these particular examples, there is quite a serious difference in scale between them. So they're very distinct transitions, and it's clear that there is truly a liquid phase in between the two. I should say there is results from two other groups, which are the Leuven and Gompert groups, who have done systems which resemble this, who also see evidence of there being an actual liquid phase in between the two regions. So we can come up with scaling arguments for actually both of these boundaries, this linear scaling, and it's quite simple. So first of all, we know something about the dense phase, the solid phase. And what we know about them is, in the absence of any thermal fluctuation, active fluctuation, anything, we know the passive equation of state. That's from the jamming, all of the research which has been done in jamming. We know that the pressure in such a system is P0 times phi minus phi j, where phi j is the jamming transition point, 0.842. And this has been measured, and this coefficient in front is 0.34 times k. This is essentially the bulk modulus of this dense system. So the idea is, at the very lowest order of approximation, I can say that the pressure in here is dominated by this term. So I can compare this to, in this hole, the active pressure. So in the holes which appear in my system, I have an active pressure generated by this. And of course, this is a complex thing, which at this point, I don't think anyone can actually calculate what it is. So the simplest approximation is very simple. What I do is say, my active particle is pushing against its neighbor for the speed V0. And just that pressure, that gives a pressure which I just divide by the diameter of the particle and normalize it by mobility. So that's all. So it's just the pressure of one particle pushing against the wall of the dense system. Then I can compare these two guys and say that my velocity, basically, if I rescale my velocity by this a times mu times k, I should say it's dimensionless number times phi minus phi j. And if these two are equal, that dimensionless number is equal to 0.68. This would be the two pressures being equal. So what we find, interestingly enough, the melting transitions is irrespective of rotation diffusion is at 0.07, which to get some kind of melting criterion at 10% of the internal pressure, we can somehow push past this thing and melt it. The clustering transition, at least in the limit of the most, of the highest Speckler number type of transition, is at the full thing at 0.7. So it means you have to essentially do something resembling, well, in the language of a first-order transition, it's something like a Maxwell criterion. You have pressure of the active system is equal to the pressure of the passive system, at least to that order of scaling argument. So at that level, we can understand more or less what's happening in this system. And I would like to end on a subtle point, which is the position of the glass and jamming transition. So if one looks at, this is a thermal system simulated by Ludovic Berthier and co-workers, Tom Witten in this case. This is the colloidal glass transition. What you see here is, so this is temperature logarithmically. You see a liquid, then a glass, and what I might want to call a jammed region. So what you see is that the glass transition line here in green, of course, moves down in a way which actually is reminiscent of what we have. But it stops here. It stops at maybe 0.58, which is in three-dimension location of the glass transition. The difference is that the jamming point, very well studied.
Can you describe how these transitions define?
It is particular, yes. There is a number of various things they've done, and the simplest way is here. Okay, this is mode coupling theory, this is a prediction, Fokker-Fulcher, also prediction. Scaling, I believe, comes in this case from the
mean. What I mean, how is the glass transition defined what? As opposed to the jamming point?
Is this okay? Sorry, it's when the system becomes trapped, and at whatever longest time scale, you can simulate either the intermediate scattering function or the mean square displacement becomes stuck at the cage level. So I should possibly draw this for you. Do we have an eraser? I could do it here. So let me plot two things. So log t. So let me start with the mean square displacement, which I've shown you pictures already. So you start usually with something ballistic, plateau. In a dense liquid and eventually diffusive at long time scales. For a very high velocity system, you might just be a liquid at any time scale. Then if the system becomes glassy, this plateau extends to infinity. It would be what's called, this is the alpha relaxation time which diverges. Similarly, for what's called intermediate scattering function, you will get in a dense liquid something resembling this, so a plateau and then eventually decay. At high enough temperature, it will decay very quickly. Then eventually for glass, this extends to infinity. So here you do some sort of time cutoff and say, my glass transition is when I can't measure this decay anymore. This
is the green line.
That's how the green line is defined. The point is that the J point, which is the point in jamming when the system starts to touch and has a positive pressure, is at higher density. So there's a gap between these two. The system becomes a glass before it is at a jamming transition. So you get essential particles which are not squeezed together yet, but are still unable to move. Difference here is, for us, these coincide, at least within the within our as far as we can measure in our system. And which is interesting is that this has been recently studied also again mostly Ludovic Berthier and some of the people of the Utrecht group who see the same shift. So they see as a function of the reorientation, active reorientation timescale, a shift of the glass transition density towards this jamming transition density. So this seems to be a uniquely active effect. Something I should add here is that for a sheared system, not a thermal system, but a system agitated by shear, the jamming transition is again here. So there's something about how the system is driven, especially the time correlation of its fluctuations, which moves this dynamic arrest from somewhere here to somewhere here. This is something to think about. So they.
So let me see if I.
Yes.
Trying to say if I understand is
yes.
That in an active system.
Yes.
And in a system which is sheared, but
yes.
Locally, right?
Sheared, yeah. Okay. Sheared locally, for example, a Lees Edwards type of shear, for
the
example.
The green line is moved towards the red line.
Yes. Exactly. Yes, I seem to be. Anyway. And so the active systems do something similar and they appear to be able to interpolate between these two regimes. And so this is more or less all I wanted to say for now. And
the green line and the red line in this graph, are they same as the green line and the red line in the other graph?
No, I mean, I don't saw it. I didn't realize.
The green line and
the blue line is the green line and the red line here. And they're the same in our graph.
But in that plot, by the way, here written in that paper. So, okay, the green line, you told us that is determined as the place where the mean-squared displacement all other decays.
Yes.
Special factor goes to a constant. Fine. The red line, the point J, is determined through simulation done at zero temperature.
Yes, exactly.
What about the dashed line, the dashed red line?
Oh, yes, that's, if you read the paper, there's a particular argument of scaling, which I don't really want to get into, that they try to scale this if adding some amount of temperature.
It's not determined by any measurements in numerics or
no. No, although if you would take, and I can show you the paper, if you take a system which is sheared and plot this as basically extrapolate this thing by adding a strain rate instead of a temperature here, you will get something resembling that red line.
Can I ask a question? Let's say if I take a confluent layer of cells, whether it's an active jammed system or an active glossy system, you want to differentiate between the two. What kind of experimental measurements will indicate that? The MSD or?
Okay, so I mean, at first what I would call an active glass and active jammed is essentially the same thing. So it's an active system.
I've seen this used interchangeably. And
I think the point that he's trying to make, if I'm saying correctly, is that while in granular systems there seems to be a difference, at least people argue that there is a difference between a glass and a jammed system. Although I have to say I don't quite understand the difference, but that seems to be what people argue. She seems to be trying to make the point that in an active system they're the same.
To some degree, though, that the two are much more linked to each other.
Yes, that's all I was asking, if they're the same or they're different.
So, I mean, I should call this as active arrested systems, if you want to have a technical term nobody will object to. And that's my main issue, is also especially looking at the dense liquids and the arrested phase and understanding its properties. So we saw in this both for a system without alignment and with alignment, you get such a phase. And I assume with different local dynamics, you can get all kinds of other things, including potentially, with of course a lot of work, experimental links and further understanding of the system, something which is applicable to epithelial sheets.
So I guess the work you described earlier on this simulation based active systems was actually motivated by these experiments on conflict.
So I mean just
the movie she showed, the dynamics is very much.
Yeah, okay, I mean just because I've taken this out of the intro, but here this is what is a confluent sheet looks like. So you see the motion of the particle of the cells moving. These are the stresses used taken by traction force microscopy. It has the same kind of heterogeneities as you can see in our system, in any granular system. Here's a separate other paper. You can see the, that's by PIV. You can see the particle displacement field of the cells. You can see the pattern is essentially the same. And I should say this pattern is just something very generic you will get with this motion at high density with some kind of driving.
I still don't understand, though. If you go back to the other, your last slide, so it's sort of Mumita's question, but I'm going to ask it a little bit. So if I am in this phase diagram, how do I distinguish experimentally or numerically? What do I measure to distinguish between glass and jam?
Okay, so. I'm uncertain. I mean, there's also been this discussion in the community. I'm uncertain if you can actually define jammed at finite temperature. So people usually, when they refer to jammed, they refer to the stuck systems. They refer to this line here at essentially zero temperature. There is more recent work, again, by Berthier.
It's also at zero temperature, first of all. The jammed state, everybody touches each other, and there is no motion. Nothing is happening.
Yes.
While the portion between J and the green line, what's that?
That's something which That's what, okay, if it was, let's say you have a system with temperature, but very, very low temperature, because at zero temperature, precisely zero temperature, I can't define this dynamical anything.
So they should be on the same, zero temperature is not.
At zero temperature, this is the only thing, because at zero temperature, I start, let's say this is very close to J, but below this, so my particles are just there, they're not touching yet, they're not overlapping yet. This would be at zero temperature here, below.
Okay.
So there's nothing, there's no pressure, there's no nothing. If I now add a bit of temperature to this, I start to jiggle around. What I get is something which is actually glass, because this, the temperature is insufficiently strong to break these cages. So I'm here, I'm in between these two guys. But on average, my particles aren't actually overlapping yet.
But it seems to me that what you're telling me,
yes,
is that zero temperature, I have either a germ state or a non-germ state.
Yes.
They either touch each other or they
exactly,
don't.
Yes.
Point J is the only,
yes,
distinction between the two. As soon as I have a finite temperature, I either have a glass or a liquid, because I cannot define the germ state.
Yes.
So
I don't
quite understand this thing.
This is extrapolation.
Yeah,
so there's more reason.
Yeah.
There's a very recent work again that says that basically there's some scaling laws of various quantities which are known for the jammed system. And they did show that for a region just around here, so very here, you can actually see the scaling of appropriate to a jammed system.
Maybe you said something before, maybe yes. Because what you said is that if one actually takes a jammed system with zero temperature and shears it,
yes,
then one gets a line
resembling the
like
red line.
Dashed red line.
Yes.
If I put on the vertical axis the shearing rate.
Yes, exactly.
But is there any reason which I should expect that line should actually coincide with the green line that I get by increasing temperature?
I'm going to draw you an old diagram which is now rarely used anymore. Or which people have, it has fallen slightly out of favor a bit. Well, I should probably not say this. Where's my eraser?
I don't know.
Maybe it's
mine. There's one there. Isn't there one there? Right there?
That's not an eraser, it's a piece of art here. Okay, so let's do this once more.
Okay, no, I understand.
Yes. I just want to draw a corner just to show it in 3D exactly what the two different limits. So one over packing fraction, temperature, and I'm going to say strain rate here. So jamming is one point here. What's this graph is showing is this plane. It says something like this. Keep in mind this is 1/1. So,
okay.
And strain.
So you're saying that the other line is
it's like this, and that's well established with scaling laws.
So the line in the plane is your right,
yes,
dash line, and
yes,
the other one is your green line.
Yes.
Why would it make sense to put them on the same plot? Squash them. I mean, there I'm okay with this. You have two different planes.
Yes. So the main reason is that because there's been so much discussion about what happens here.
I see.
They coincide. So what I'm saying is for an active system, like if I make this not T, but V0,
then these two points coincide.
That at least in the limit of basically dr going to zero, and I can get lines here in between, apparently, so it resembles more this thing. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Is there any other questions?
OK.
glasses, they have now this well-defined phenomenology of aging and such things.
Honest answer, I don't know. This is the, aging, possibly, I don't know. Nobody has studied active glasses for sufficiently long times to see if there's actually anything happening to them or in sufficient detail.
Some people have been applying the soft glossy rheology theory to active systems, right?
Yeah.
And they have aging in that.
Yeah, but I...
Okay, I need to look through this in more detail.
That's it.
Yes.
Which is what people say with
that. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's something worth thinking about.
Claims the literature that rather than using MSDs or intermediate scaling engine, if you use the average cosine of a track particle, it's a lot more sensitive to the measurement of aging for the NASR.
Okay, I should look at that.
Using as an order parameter to test some directionality and persistence.
Persistence.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, especially since for the active system, orientation is something very crucial. So, no, thank you for pointing that out.
So rather than doing an MSD, if you have a track particle, and you think of two time segments, and you take a scalar product, and then you divide by the amplitude of both of the vectors, you get the cosine of the angle there, and you can average that, a bit like an MSD, different lag time.
So it's not
what
you do with a
pod. Yeah.
Actually, the section.
Or if you had a cage
colloid. Right.
This is a section.
The cage, it goes negative, which is really quite nice. Mm-hmm. If it's just Brownian, it's zero. And if it goes persistent, as it starts going over in another direction.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. That. Yes. Yeah, especially on an active one like this. Okay.
Well, thanks again.
Oh, yes, that took a bit longer.